Welcome to Leading Lines, a podcast from Vanderbilt University. I'm your host, Derek Bruff, Director of the Vanderbilt Center for Teaching. In this podcast, we explore creative, intentional, and effective uses of technology to enhance student learning. Uses that point the way to the future of educational technology in college and university settings. In this episode, we feature an interview with Enoch Hale, Director of Teaching and Learning Excellence at Virginia Commonwealth University. I've been impressed with the innovative work on educational technology at VCU for years now, and Enoch has been a key player in many of those initiatives. He has a way of making clear the connection between a piece of technology and the kinds of student learning we might want to foster with that technology. We start the interview by talking about three technologies he's been experimenting with in his own teaching and in his faculty development work. One quick note, during the interview, I keep mispronouncing the name of one of the technologies. The tool is called Flipgrid with an I, not Flipgrade with an A. Enoch, thanks for being on our podcast.
Thank you.
We're here at the Pod Network Conference. Pod stands for Professional and Organizational Development Network. I'm here because I'm a director of a teaching center, and you're here because you're a director of a teaching center. And so this is our professional conference, and I'm glad to have a little time to chat with you while we're here about educational technology.
Yeah, thank you. I'm honored. This is exciting.
So let's start with something kind of concrete. Can you describe a project or two that you've been involved with at Virginia Commonwealth that's used educational technology in interesting ways?
Yeah, so the three, let me give you just three quick snapshots. One is Flipgrid.
Flipgrid. What is that?
Flipgrid is it's an online interface, and I like it because students don't have to log in. I also like it because I put out a prompt, a video prompt or a text prompt, and then students send them the link, they press the button, and they have 90 seconds to record their reply. And so then it puts it up on a grid, according to when students log on. And that's one technology I've been using. How I'm using it is the interesting part. But before I get to that, another one is Timeline.js. And
yeah.
One of my former colleagues introduced me to the Timeline. It's free, right? And it's designed to create history timelines. What I'm trying to do with it is have students use it to craft the narrative of their intellectual growth over the course of a semester within a given discipline. And so it's an act of making the thinking visible, but using Timeline.js as the medium. And then the third one is I'm running it this semester in the class that I teach, but also my professional work, playing around with telescopic text. And
what is that?
So telescopic text, free, but the idea is that, so you start out with a platform, a statement that you can make, but it's limited to, I think, 150 characters or something to that effect. And then you have to unpack a logic to it. So what it is it's an elaboration tool. So you can highlight a particular word and then type in your elaboration. Now what you see is just a highlighted word, but as soon as you click on that, it unpacks. It telescopes.
Okay.
Thank you. And so you can go on and on and on and on. And I think, once again, the excitement of that is how it's being used.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So three tools, all free, right?
Flipgrid costs $60 a year.
Okay. All right. But the other two are free, and you're using these, some in your own teaching, but then... All in your own teaching.
Okay. And in faculty development.
Okay.
The telescopic text, we're just playing around with faculty right now, but I use the Flipgrid, for example, in our Learning Spaces Fellows program.
Okay.
To get, the idea was they needed to reflect on their experiences in this experimental classroom. Movable furniture, amazing technology.
Because these are faculty who were teaching in...
Yes.
Kind of active learning space classroom.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
So when I got them together, the reflections were fine. But they had a hard time beyond that of just a loose, informal at times dialogue, like recording it. So we have a WordPress site, RAM pages, /spaces, acts as a mother blog to pull in their blogs. And I give them prompts, and they're to blog about that. But some of them weren't doing that.
Okay.
Some thrived in the blog environment. Others, it just seemed too big of an investment. So I used Flipgrid.
tell me more about Flipgrid. What does it look like? How does it work?
So if I have my account, I create a grid. And what that grid is, it's like one topic, let's just say. I have a grid called Learning Spaces. Okay. And within that, I can have multiple questions. Each question represents one experience. And so I'll submit a question. And once again, I like it because students don't have to log on. But it's similar to, it's not totally similar, but I'm thinking of VoiceThread.
Yeah.
Okay. VoiceThread. And that interfaces in our LMS system.
Okay.
So I like that, but students have to have a unique login. So, and we're just working out the bumps there.
Sure.
I think as a comprehensive tool, VoiceThread is tremendous. But Flipgrid is great for capturing micro experiences.
Okay.
So I put out a prompt. I tend to like video prompts. And then students watch the prompt, mm-hmm. and they respond to my question. And they have 90 seconds.
Through video or audio or text?
It's all video.
It's all video, okay.
So, I mean, they can create an avatar if they want, but from their phone, their computer.
Okay.
So that's the one requirement, is they have some type of digital tool.
Sure.
And we, you know, do our best with students to make those available. The faculty really liked it because it's a pretty low investment in terms of time.
Gotcha. So if I'm on my phone, I'll just capture the video with my phone's camera, or if I'm at my laptop, I'll just use the webcam.
And that's part of the fun. It's also part of the challenge because, you know, you're sitting there in the middle of the student commons and you might get a lot of background
noise.
Another time, though, you'll have students at home. You know, I had one student, a grad student, who was in his backyard, and he used fire as a metaphor to capture.
They could shoot live on location wherever they need.
So faculty, and I presented some of my initial findings with faculty, and also using Flipgrid at a conference at University of Tennessee this last year for their Learning Spaces conference. I do think it's important to say that the way I'm trying to use technology in my own instruction and in faculty development isn't, here's an interesting tool. I like the metaphor of a tool, but I think it's also kind of overused and often abused. You know, so I want to use technology that is generative, meaning I want it to be necessary in cultivating the insights or skills or dispositions that I want to emerge from the learning experience within that particular discipline or course. Okay. So in other words, I want it to be like a insight generator. And if I was to put this as a question, is the technology necessary for the insight that I want to emerge? Now, in many cases, I think the tools aren't necessary. And so if they're not necessary, and I should say, I want to use the word necessary, and I believe that's what I look for, it's my criteria, but integral might be a better, more accurate term. But if it's not integral to the learning experience, then oftentimes I have to ask as a faculty developer, how much investment do I have to put in to actually help faculty see its merit?
Sure, sure.
To, you know, there's learning curves involved with some of these things.
So something like Flipgrid.
Flipgrid.
Right? So let's think about the Learning Spaces group that you've got, right? In what sense is that integral to the kinds of conversations you want to have with that group?
So with faculty, it's pragmatic in a sense that it's solving a problem of capturing their reflections.
Right. You wanted to hear from everyone.
Right.
You wanted them all to be reflective. Like when you got them together in the room together, you would hear from some, but maybe not all.
Yeah, and there was also more of an organic conversation. So it became more integral to the type of thinking I wanted to cultivate when, number one, I said, what's the thinking direction?
Right.
So I'm putting thinking first. What's the insight that I want to emerge, or at least the skill I want them to practice? And when I have faculty interfacing with Flipgrid, for example, I'm able to scaffold out a series of questions that provides them a concentrated lens. They have to think concisely, right? And so they're having to actually do quite a bit of forethought to...
Because there's a time limit on the video?
Yeah, 90 seconds.
90 seconds, okay.
So I'm talking about elaborating. I'm elaborating a lot, but really the art is being concise.
Yeah, yeah.
And finally, crafting those experiences so that it encourages faculty to listen to others. And I say faculty, but I mean students as well.
Right.
So for example, I'll put a Flipgrid out and I'll say, all right, first question is, let's just say, what was an insight that your students came to as a result of shifting their furniture? And I said, now you're the first person to see this is gonna answer that question. But then you're gonna ask a question. So the second person to log on is not only going to see my prompt,
sure,
but has to listen to the first person to get their question. And so
there's a chain.
And it encourages students listening to each other, faculty to listening to each other. Faculty are much more
interactive. If I'm fourth, I don't have to listen to all three that preceded me, but I have to listen to the one that preceded me.
That's correct.
Interesting. Okay.
But what I found that with faculty, it's, of course, a lot easier. People actually want to hear what others have to say.
Sure, sure.
And this is a very beneficial thing, I think, of like VoiceThread, where you can have text options.
Right.
It's a much more inclusive technology as well. But that way, students can see the chain of conversation. With Flipgrid, that's not its purpose. Its purpose is to capture individual reflections, but I want to use it also as an opportunity to encourage a greater discussion that we can then transfer into the classroom or transfer, you know, continue the conversation in another modality.
Yeah, yeah. So just for clarity, you talked about using this with your own students. What types of questions might you have them address?
So the content-based questions. One of the classes I teach is a graduate class on the teaching, learning, and technology in the future of higher education.
Okay.
And so
sounds like a great topic.
I think so, yeah. So, you know, we're talking about, okay, let's just talk about digital engagement, specifically in cultivating and crafting online discussions. And what does active listening look like in that environment? And so I would put forth that question. I can identify specific lens, and this is what I say. I can give a broad question, or I can say something to the effect. Identify two assumptions that the author made within this argument, and what are their implications, you know, for the broader discourse.
Flipgrid, you mentioned that there's this element of concision, right? You've got 90 seconds, and you've got a kind of... Now, you also talked about, what was your text expander tool?
Yeah, telescopic text.
Telescopic text, which seems to kind of work in the opposite direction. Right?
It's an elaboration tool.
Yeah, yeah.
So telescopic text is fascinating because as I'm using it, I'm putting the thinking first. And I think that's where technology becomes powerful and integral to the learning experience. It's like when clickers or you're doing poll everywhere. When you can see yourself in relation, the data visualization is where that becomes something
I'm that bar graph.
Exactly.
I'm that part of the bar graph, right?
You're seeing yourself within it.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm looking for. People to see technology where people can see their thinking development within it.
Okay.
See themselves. Their identity becomes part of the experience. So what I'm, like telescopic text, the first objective is to take a reading, for example. And in my case, I took my syllabus. And I said, what's the essential question that I want to ask that this course is always going to go back to? And so I boiled it down to that one question. And the question for this particular course, an undergraduate course called Inquiry in the Craft of Argument, is do people make decisions about what to believe and do based on sound reasoning? That's all that was written there.
Okay. Right? It's a big question,
It's
right?
a big question.
Yeah, but it's the central question for your course.
And it was a lot of intellectual work to kind of distill all these questions that they're going to be thinking through.
Yeah.
What is it all going back to, right? So, and that's an insight from like backwards design, for example.
Sure.
You know, it's a it's a tenet of course design. So that's one skill, is being able to take an article, being able to take a lecture and condense it down to its essential question or elements, or I would say
thesis,
it's claims. Then they have to elaborate on that. So they're having to then identify specific concepts that we're not going to take for granted, that we have a shared understanding, but they're going to unpack them. And the skill there is being able, elaboration is being able to make connections between related ideas in order to really create a map of understanding of that particular concept.
So for your central question, do people make decisions based on evidence?
Right.
You might take the word evidence and expand that?
Exactly.
Okay.
You know, I say, do you, instead of do people, I say, do you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, another one I did is like, for example, what the question as it started to unpack is, do people make decisions, inferences, beliefs, based upon sound, well-reasoned, justified, and valid arguments rather than tradition, groupthink, and mere persuasion. Now, those were the unpacking.
Okay.
And then the next question came up, should we? Now, I highlighted we, and you press we, and it says, is it important to do so? All right, highlighted so, you know, what are the consequences if we don't? Highlighted consequences and don't, but consequences says, No, implications.
Right.
The consequences of things that have actually happened, right?
Right, so, right.
And I wanted to shift that. Well, I highlighted implications.
I mean, I'm reminded a little bit of like a good Prezi, right? Where
you kind of
see the big picture, but then you zoom in on one piece and start to unpack that a little bit, and you can zoom in again. It sounds like this is, in some ways, kind of a text version of that.
I haven't thought of it that way, but that's exactly right. That's why I like Prezi, in the sense that you can see the big picture at any time.
Right.
I think the challenging part, though, with telescopic text and why I love it so much is it's hard enough for students to, like, find the essential claim or question. It's also hard for them to be mindful of the concepts that need to be elaborated.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But to map that out so that the tool works is an amazingly difficult process because you're having to, in essence, lay out the logic so that if you press unpack any word, wherever it is, the sentence still reads.
Oh, wow.
Because you can mess it up, right?
And
all of a sudden, it's not doing what it needs to do. So they actually have to create these logic maps on the whiteboards that really that show where they're going to unfold.
Yeah, okay.
And then build it.
Yeah.
And so this telescopic text, given those goals right now, is integral. And when I build in a meta, like a reflective, a metacognitive activity within it, it becomes a necessary condition for the type of thinking I want to cultivate.
I'm thinking of my cryptography course that I teach where, you know, we look at, you know, questions of surveillance and security and privacy and how, like, there's a simple way to ask that question, right? Like, should the government be able to read all of our emails, right? And, like, any little piece of that can get kind of exploded in different ways.
And isn't that, like, what the essence of what academia is about? It's being able to ask a question about some phenomenon, right?
Right, right.
And think through its implications.
Yeah.
It's see complexity. And so I'm trying to find tools that are seemingly simple. Flipgrid, telescopic text, and use them in extraordinary ways. Now, am I an expert at it? No.
But I think we have to try, right?
And this is the part that I'm really excited about, is that when I see a new tool, my initial consumption of it is, oh, here's a tool. But when I take the concept tool and set it aside and say, all right, how is it a generator?
Yeah.
What kind of thinking does it foster or help me foster? Something happens in my own mind. I not only become excited, I begin to see and lay out my plan for growth. And that's what I did a survey of faculty, just an informal survey at my own institution saying, all right, how many of you have a plan of development for your scholarship? 90th percentile.
Right, yeah, everyone's got a plan.
For your service? You know, over 60% did.
Okay.
Right? How about for your teaching? One. We're talking about over 100 faculty that I
just,
one.
One has a plan for developing their teaching over time.
And so I want to think, well, what's my plan for developing my own competencies? Not just knowledge. And I think it parallels in part how students often see coursework is a one-way transactional input-output. But no, so I think the technology has a real power, if the thinking is put first, to actually be a generator of insights.
Let's move to your other example, Timeline.js. How are you using that with students?
So this was interesting.
There's some metacognition happening here too, right?
Yeah. I asked myself, okay, what is the one content insight? If nothing else happens, what's the one content insight I want to have them walk away with? Okay, that's easy enough. But I was like, what's the insight that I want them to have about how they learn?
Hmm.
So that requires tracking. And oftentimes we track with journals, right?
Okay.
I don't want to read more. I mean,
you have enough to read.
I have enough to read. I don't want to read that.
Right.
So, I'm trying to use technology as a way to condense, but also visualize the thinking, their narrative of intellectual growth. And here's the thing: is students don't necessarily, in my experience, I don't want to overgeneralize, but think about taking Bio 101 from the point of view. All right, not only what am I going to learn, but what am I going to learn about learning? Can I track my intellectual growth? And that's what I want to focus on, because we have a lot of investment in general education.
Sure,
we have a lot
sure.
of investment in the claim that there's transferable skills, and so or insights or dispositions. So Timeline.js was an opportunity for me using a free tool for students to begin to craft a narrative over time. And TimelineJS allows you to, so it's a timeline, right? And for each marker, it allows you to put an artifact. So a video, a student can make a video or find a video, a picture, a chart, a diagram, or a PDF copy of their paper. So when they say, yeah, I have cultivated, become more skilled in asking questions of clarification that target an author's assumptions. I've done this in class. I also do it in my work. And here's an example. At the beginning of the term in my paper, or this, you know, this article, I didn't notice this. But at the end of the term, here's examples from my work.
Wow.
And it's just a PDF picture. Where you say, that's been tremendous. I think the secret, though, is less is more in that case. You know, all the different intellectual moves and skills we work through, targeting and focusing on just a few, really helps students see visually how often, just with asking clarifying questions, examples and definitions and elaborations, you know, how often we do that work, but we don't necessarily do it mindfully and strategically. So it becomes more implicit, we hope, right? But I question its consistency in application. When I can throw it out there, let alone more complex intellectual moves, you know, but when I could put it out, I could see, really help students see, like, look at the work you've done in here intellectually and how you've grown or not.
You know? So do they build this timeline retrospectively, or do they add to it as they go during the semester?
We add to it as we go during the semester.
Okay.
At the end, though, I want a comprehensive timeline.
Okay.
What I also like about all three of these tools is they can upload visually by virtue of a link into even Flipgrid, like an LMS, at least our LMS, like Blackboard, or a WordPress site. So I can put it up on my course sites, and it's really exciting, because then I can share it with faculty and say, well, yeah, you can say TimelineJS isn't something you really can do. I'm like, well, I did it, students do it, and they're sophomores, and yours are seniors. I mean, we have these amazing claims that by virtue of going through this biology program, you can think like a biologist. Turns out we cater to the elite students.
Yeah.
And I believe that if we're going to live up to the ideals of what a true liberal education can provide, then we have to have those metacognitive components and the visualization. I learned, of course, a lot from your concept mapping. You know, first your note mapping exercises, and that's what it is, making the thinking visible so that it can be a guide for development.
I love that.
Those are like three examples that I've been working on lately.
It sounds like Flipgrid, you're kind of using the tool as the producer of the tool intended, right? It's called Flipgrid, right? It's designed
Flipgrid,
for educational.
Yeah.
Flipgrid.
Grid, yeah.
I keep saying grade. Flipgrid. Okay, that makes more sense. But with the timeline tool, like, this is kind of an off-label use, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not kind of what you think of as a timeline.
That's right.
But the tool allows these types of interactions and creativity and documenting, and you're using it for a very particular educational purpose.
Mm-hmm. And you know, you've seen other people, and I've done it myself, try to capture those student narratives of developments from blog posts to something like Glogster. Or
portfolio of
portfolio,
some sort.
Yeah,
right?
You know, if we talk about e-portfolios a lot. And so I'm trying to use technology, one, free.
That helps.
But in a way that expands my understanding of what's possible, because those other tools are designed to do that.
Right.
And then therefore they have limitations. So oftentimes, even if students are interfacing with those, if we just flip it, just nudge it a little bit with a tool that's on the fringes, or not for that purpose.
Right. It wasn't designed for educational purposes.
It can really shake things up.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing I heard you say earlier is that this idea of kind of experimentation and innovation. And I think sometimes I hear from faculty this worry that, oh, I'm not going to adopt this tool or this practice if I can't see evidence that it works. And in general, that's probably a good response, right?
Sure.
Like, we don't want to just, like start doing stuff that doesn't make sense, right? But if there aren't some of us, at least, who are willing to experiment with some new thing and figure out what it can do and what it can't do and how it taps into student learning, right? Like, we'll never know if a timeline tool could be used for this type of metacognition, right? Someone's got to kind of kick the tires and see if that works.
Yeah, I agree completely. I also think there are certain technologies that faculty can see the immediate They don't need evidence to say, oh, this overhead projector, right? Hey. Oh, this document camera. Show me that that thing is going to lead to the insights. No, why? Because it translates immediately into their existing practice. It's just a way of augmenting it.
Sure.
The thinking, though, if we put the thinking first, then I think we have many more opportunities to engage with things. Because people can use an overhead projector, although I haven't seen one for years, but they could use it superficially, or they could use it in a way that is kind of outside of the norm. It depends on what they're trying to get students to, how they're trying to get students to see and think.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that though, as far as faculty development goes, it doesn't, I don't care if it's a rubric or something like telescopic text, faculty have to see how it functions.
What it looks like in practice.
Done well.
Yeah.
Not just executed well, but cultivating the type of insights that really mean something to them, that resonate with them.
You know, our podcast is called Leading Lines, and we're not trying to predict the future necessarily, it's shape the future. And so as you think about kind of where educational technology might go in the next 2 to 3 years, where would you like it to go? How would you like faculty to use it?
Personally, because of my orientation, I'm not an educational technologist. I'm an educator who's interested in multiple modalities by which to engage a thinker. And so I would love to see educational technology move in the direction that is seriously considering ways to help cultivate the habits of mind, those dispositions of curiosity, integrity, perseverance, flexibility, playfulness, you know,
yeah.
So many, the open-mindedness as a way to use tools that's where the tool is intended to go. Other things are going to be involved in terms of skills, and if we can think about technology as a way to actually look at the world. I mean, there are certain technologies that do that, right? But they're not necessarily the dispositions that we want. For example, we Facebook. If you put Facebook on your phone, it's appealing. It's easy, right? But it's remarkably egocentric at times. You know?
Right.
Not necessarily always, but it's... So what can we do to develop tools that get students to think about their thinking in a way that, yeah, I can evidence, or this tool is actually a lens by which I can think more creatively.
Yeah.
You know, I know there's a lot of tools out there that help do that, but if we put those type of thinking goals first, I think it might resonate a lot more with higher education. Another area I'm very interested in, and Kaizena would be an example of an LMS that allows for this in part, but what would technological resources look like if they're helping us cultivate the type of thinking that we like to see within the discipline? So Timeline.js, thinking like a historian, in part, right?
Right.
You know, Kaizena allows for you to put scientific equations within and build those. So, you know, and that's more of a discussion forum. But what does it mean to think like a biologist or like a historian or a literary critic? And how can we develop tools where the learning curve, that's not just augmenting, it becomes integral to the learning process? And I'm curious, I think it's called Arisma. And so what they did is you could take your iPad, and if you download the Arisma app, they have some preloaded things. And really, it's just, if you see, it's a Mona Lisa.
Okay.
So you see the Mona Lisa, and you hold your iPad up, and what you actually see is it move.
Yeah?
It moves. So you put it up to like an empty wall, and you picture a Mona Lisa, but then she begins talking, or she begins moving.
Yeah.
I would love to see something like that. What would it look like if I went to a historical area?
Mm-hmm.
Richmond is full of, you know, Lumpkin's Jail, for example. It was a slave quarters, a jailhouse for slaves. And you could hold your iPad up there and see, you know, some type of rendering of here in this spot. Because when you're holding that up to the wall, you see the wall.
Right.
But it allows us this image to emerge. God, that would be so mind-blowing, you know?
Yeah.
Because I think that part of the difficulty of thinking within discipline is not having a visceral reaction to what mitochondria mitosis, you know, feel like. So being able to see that, and right now, our main medium for doing so is video.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
But that's not always easily, it's more accessible now. But I'd like to see habits of mind and disciplinary forms of thinking mm-hmm. begin to emerge. I have my own other interests too. Going back to that question, do people make decisions based on what to believe and do on sound reasoning? I would love to see tools that really help the populace gain a greater confidence in what quality reasoning does for us. And what that tool is, I don't know. I'm not that guy.
right. But what I'm also hearing is some of these tools are going to be discipline specific. And
that's okay.
And that's okay, but we might need folks who know the discipline well who can help craft and shape what those mm-hmm. tools look like. Right? It's one thing to take kind of WordPress, which is a kind of generic blogging platform, right? Mm-hmm. You can do all kinds of things with WordPress. It's not kind of tailored for one particular use, whereas some of the tools that you were imagining are much more kind of from the disciplines and would have to kind of build disciplinary thinking in to the tool itself in some really significant way. And I think that's a big challenge, actually.
Yeah, I would agree. I think a possible workaround, when you think about like what does it mean to think like a biologist? I mean, there's broader intellectual moves at play. They're just contextualized around specific questions within the field.
Yeah.
So if we scale it out to think about what does it mean to look at something in nature and ask a question as a biologist would ask a question. Well, you're not asking a theological question. You're not right. necessarily asking a mathematical question. You're asking a biological question. So it's the act of asking a question within a particular lens. So the tool mm-hmm. might focus on asking questions and then give the user an opportunity to then contextualize that according to the theories and insights and knowledge that inform the discipline. Because all disciplines are based upon certain assumptions,
yeah.
are dealing with a network core set of questions, and they have specific methodologies that help advance that. So those are general transdisciplinary
sure,
types
sure.
of things. So maybe a workaround is focusing on the thinking that, and then
yeah.
allowing it to be contextualized.
Most of what we talk about on this podcast is digital educational technology. What's one of your favorite analog educational technologies?
Whiteboard markers.
Yeah.
Whether it's a winked wall, you write. I love that.
Kind of wall?
A wall. It's a paint.
Oh, sure.
It's just a whiteboard.
Whiteboard
turns
right.
a wall
so the whole
into
wall
whiteboard.
Is a whiteboard. Yeah, yeah.
Or movable whiteboards or whiteboards enough for all students to begin to map out their thinking with whiteboards.
Nice.
It's funny because the learning space is one of our innovative classrooms. It has whiteboards. It has multiple points of projection, movable furniture. Consistently, faculty say their favorite technology in the room is the whiteboards.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like you can talk to somebody in China. They're like, yeah, but I need to like lay something out on the wall here.
Right? Yeah, 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 yeah. Or have students kind of draw out whatever
yeah.
they're thinking or share a problem with someone else. Yeah, yeah.
Whiteboards.
I like it. All right. Thank you very much, Enoch.
Thank you, Derek.
That was Enoch Hale, Director of Teaching and Learning Excellence at Virginia Commonwealth University. Enoch mentioned several really fascinating technologies. In the show notes, you'll find some links to those technologies, as well as more information about Enoch and his work at VCU. You can find those show notes on our website, leadinglinespod.com. We welcome your comments and questions there, and on Twitter, where our handle is @leadinglinespod. If you've experimented with Flipgrid, or Telescopic Text, or TimelineJS, I would love to hear about your experiences, either on our website or on Twitter. Leading Lines is produced by the Center for Teaching, the Vanderbilt Institute for Digital Learning, the Office of Scholarly Communications, and the Associate Provost for Digital Learning. This episode was edited by Rhett McDaniel. Look for new episodes the first and third Monday of each month. I'm your host, Derek Bruff. Thanks for listening.